ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय वरनेन्द्रम् पुरस्कृत्य ब्रह्मणाय सुमङ्गलाय शङ्ख कुर्या निनादेन ब्रह्मा घोषेण सादृथाः प्रद्युज्यमु रथे हृष्ठा प्राणयागता सद्वशाः वरेण वरनेन्द्रम् पुरस्कृत्य ब्रह्मणैः सुमङ्गलैः शङ्खतुर्यनिनादेन ब्रह्मघोषेण च धृताः Varana Indram. Elephants on the auspicious mission. Puraskritya. Putting in the front. Brahmanai. By the Brahmanas. Sasumangalai. With all auspicious signs. Shankha, Panchal, Turya, Bugle, Nidadena, by the sound of, Brahmagoshena, by chanting the hymns of the Vedas, Cha, and Adrita, glorified. Prati, towards. Ujjagamu, proceeded hurriedly. Rathai, on the chariots. Rishta, in cheerfulness. Pranayagata, saturated with affection. Sadhav, Sadvashaha, all respectful. Translation. They hastened towards the Lord on elephants, on chariots, with brahmanas bearing flowers. Before them were elephants, emblems of good fortune. Conch shells and bugles were sounded, and Vedic hymns were chanted. Thus they offered their respects, which were saturated with affection. Report. The Vedic way of receiving a great personality creates an atmosphere of respect, which is saturated with affection and veneration for the person received. The auspicious atmosphere of such a reception depends on the paraphernalia described above, including conch shells, flowers, incense, decorated elephants, and the qualified brahmanas reciting verses from the Vedic literatures. Such a program of reception is full of sincerity on the part of both the receiver and the received. So everything in the Vedic culture then is geared that it will create a good atmosphere. And in that atmosphere, there will be proper interaction or reciprocation amongst the individuals of the community. This is the purpose of this whole Vedic concept. Much of the time it's thought that its rules and regulations make it very, dry or very boring, stiff, or unable to manifest the human element. But that's maybe because it's not fully attempted. Any endeavor means there must be full commitment. If you ever perform anything without full commitment, you will never get a full result, and therefore you'll never get satisfaction from that endeavor. So the Vedic culture was whatever was done fully. So therefore then the results are full, the emotional interaction is full, it's connected with the philosophy fully, the if there's any senses are involved, they're fully engaged. Any interaction, it creates prosperity, so that is taken care of. So all this comes from commitment. So we see that that's a major point that Krishna is making in the Gita, is that of one-pointed determination. It's focus. And because of that focus, then one gets a good result. If one has too many desires, even when it's following the Vedic culture, we see those that are following, but their minds are distracted. There's too many desires happening at once. Then it doesn't create a good situation, right? It means whatever is the highest in the spiritual world is the lowest here, right? So in the spiritual world, tasting many, many ecstasies at once is considered the highest. So we see this in the various manifestations of prema. That is one of the elements that's beyond what we call, means in the 10 stages of prema, prema technically is the second stage. The second stage is called prema. Beyond that, raga, anuraga, and all these different things, then the ecstasies that are happening are more and more and more combined. Right? So they are the most intense. But in the material world, when there's too many things happening at once, nothing gets done. One may have had an interesting experience, but results, you don't get much. So in the spiritual world, because results means pleasing Krishna, that manifestation of ecstasy pleases Krishna. That's why the ecstasy is there. Krishna's most pleased. But result, and that is the result. But in the material world, generally, one wants something along with that. Right? We generally take it that the facilities we get, the various prosperous results, that's what we're looking for. We miss the point that it's actually the interaction, it's the relationship. That's actually what's going on. So just as relationship is the highest thing in the spiritual world, technically it's the lowest thing here. People nowadays talk relationship. I hear a lot of talk of relationship, hear it all the time. But if you actually analyze, the more and more these talks about relationship, actually the less and less relationship is happening. Because it always favors one person over another, one party over another. But it's nice language. In English, it's technically called a euphemism. A good example of euphemism was in the Bosnian War. So then there, while that was going on, then they were doing what was called ethnic cleansing. Sounds great. You know, clean up the ethics or whatever, the ethos or the ethnical situations. But what it meant was mass massacre or genocide of a particular race of persons that was ethnically not favored. So we can see such a horrible thing can be made such sound great, even desirable, just by changing the name, ethnic cleansing. So the modern self-centered agenda of the non-Vedic paradigm, you simply use sweet language, it sounds great. Right? In modern terms, they call this spin doctrine. It means you take something terrible and turn it around by nice language and all that, it sounds great. So the Vedas, they don't work like that. It has to be right for everybody. But at the same time, as the Vedas are for humans, that definitely is a drawback. It's not for tribals. It's for humans. Right? Of course, one good thing is in Kali Yuga everyone's born Shudras, Shudras are humans. It's just a matter of if after that you maintain the human standard and that, or you drop into something lower, some variety of tribal, or you elevate yourself above, or whatever. So then, in doing this, we have to be very, very careful. Something sounds great, that's all right. But it doesn't mean it is. We have to see that it actually works all around. But, as we mentioned before, human life we have to be trained in. We're not born into human life. We're trained into human life. Then in that position, then we become, you know, standard. Our culture is standard, our activities are standard, how we value and interact is standard. It becomes nice. Then we see is that these platforms of interaction that we hear about in the Vedic literatures, that becomes standard. It becomes very nice. The interactions are very good. So we always have to be very, very careful that when we are speaking these different things in relationship, that we actually mean the relationship that both parties or all parties involved are going to benefit. Right? Otherwise, if one party benefits, another doesn't, then that's not relationship. It may be a very gentle or sophisticated form of exploitation, right? But it's not relationship. Right? That's why exploitation is taken so badly, because it means no relationship. But it doesn't mean that you take the same situation and just put some nice words on it, sweet words or some technical words or like that, then suddenly now it becomes okay. But that's what's going on. So we have to be very careful to see that this Vedic method is meant that it knows the nature of everybody. Therefore, everyone will be satisfied. But of course, one has to be trained in it so that one knows what is the nature and what are the needs. Because otherwise, if you don't know, just like children. Okay, they want to eat anything and everything, it just tastes good. But because they don't know that eating is meant for health, you know, it should taste nice also, right? Ayurveda mentions that what is good for health also should taste nice. Right? If you don't like the taste, you're not inspired by it, it won't do as much for your health as if you were. Right? So the combination that it's healthy and it's something inspiring, that's the best combination. Right? So neither are great platform. Either just eat what you like because it tastes good, don't worry for health, or only worry about health and don't care about the taste. The combination is the ideal, because then health is taken care of, the gross body is taken care of, and the subtle body is taken care of. The satisfaction is good and you like it, you're inspired by it. Because just seeing it and being pleased with it, that already starts the assimilation process. So you're seeing it, the fragrance of it, the texture of it, you're already starting to assimilate it. Because if the subtle body doesn't assimilate it, the gross body won't. Right? You eat something you don't like, you know, you get sick. So subtle body has to take it. Right? So the two have to be there. So that's the Vedic culture. You have to know. So the kids don't know. So you train them. Then they become mature with time. They know what's good and what they like. Then their life goes nice. Right? Ayurveda mentions that the intelligent man is one whose food is his medicine. What he eats should be what makes him healthy. So that means it has to have both those things. It's something that is favorable towards them, and both health-wise and in, you know, their inspiration. So we can see is just because we want it doesn't mean it's good for us. The difficulty is kids are smaller, so it's easier to see their ego, right? And because it's a different scene. You cross 16, kids are kids, adults are adults. It's two different worlds. So therefore, the kid's false ego, that they want to do what they want to do, then is naturally seen as, untrained, immature, inexperienced. But the adult, who is exactly the same mentality, just the ego is bigger, but because now adults is the whole field, then everybody accepts, okay, I got an attitude, he's got an attitude. So as long as we have a sophisticated system of etiquette, then my attitude and their attitude don't create too much trouble for each other, it's fine. But it doesn't mean that anyone's actually trained. Right? Don't make that mistake. Just because we have an attitude that everybody else has doesn't mean we're trained. Right? It just means that we've agreed as a social body to that we have the same attitude problem and we all agree to work within it. So therefore, it's considered a social norm. Right? But that's the difference. The Vedic means the norm is set by God. God sets the norm, and then we have to adjust with it. Not a popular thing. It didn't do good for Socrates, right? He got snuffed for it, like that. And all the nice judges and lawyers and doctors and bureaucrats and administrators who are sophists, who believe that popular sentiment is absolute, they won. Right? So this dichotomy has been going on in Western culture since that time. That's recorded, right? So, of course, everybody, you know, nobody talks about the sophists. They all talk about Socrates. But the actual thing is the culture follows the sophists, not Socrates. Right? If there are any rules that are established that everybody come, okay, don't steal, don't kill, don't, those are all coming from something religion. It's coming from God. Right? Maybe now it's been separated so much, it's just being a good person, a nice person, a considerate person. But its origins is in religious, in religiosity. And just with the, you know, secular state, then it's become a secular education. It's been separated. People don't know its origin. It doesn't mean its origin's not there. Right? But it has its origin. So this kind of thing, just because everybody says, doesn't make it right. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Prabhupada are very strong on this. Just because it's popular doesn't make it right. You want to have fun? You look up Vox Populi in the folio. And then you'll see Prabhupada's opinion on it. Him and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. It was like one of their main points to fight against. Just because you have 1,000 fools say something wrong is right doesn't make it right. Right? It has to be right. And why is it right? Because it works. Why does it work? Because that's the way God made it. Right? Things work in the material world if it's done according to God's plan. One can say, well, so many things work, but then you see the full picture. Right? You see the complete picture. Right? You have gambling. Okay. Looks great. Government gets revenue. They can build roads. They can do so much social work. They can do so many nice things. Right? Because they get big revenue. But at the same time, they finesse the whole point of how many families are broken up. How much money is wasted. You know, families falling apart. They've done studies. Right? Countries do studies on this. Like you have countries that certain states will accept gambling, certain won't. Why? Because they know these studies. They know you have gambling, your social fabric falls apart. They know it. So those who accept it, they take that risk that, okay, we'll just put extra money into all these welfare and social activities. And they hope that it'll balance. Right? But it's not, it may or may not. So the bigger picture is it seen. Right? You do so many kinds of ugra karma, it looks great. You know, you have this nice, shiny, you know, how do you say, Mercedes E-Class car sitting out in front of your house. But what is the other part of it? It looks great in your driveway, but what does the factory and all those areas around it look like? Right? So that one has to check. So that's the point, is the modern may come up with some great answers to immediate problems, but it doesn't necessarily long-term. It's like the kids. Okay, I eat this, now I'm hungry, I eat this, great. But then, you know, how many hours later, they're sick. But the nature is the living entity tends to forget that side of it. That's not what's considered important. What's important is what happens today, if not what happens yesterday. You know, I want my desires filled yesterday. You know, why do I have to wait till today to get them? You know, but the Vedas, it's you need to fulfill today's, but you also need to fulfill what's going to be there in the future. Right? One's young now, but one's going to have needs in the future. So one should take care of in youth that one does something that won't affect what's going to be your needs in the future either. Right? You have a great time now, and then later on you're messed up. You know? It doesn't work like that. It does work like that. People do it all the time. But in reality, it's not what's ideal. So that's the concept here. So that's why you see Prabhupada's always recommending. It is mundane. One must understand the Vedic culture is mundane, but so is Western. So is anything in the material world other than God, His holy name, the deity, right, the Bhagavatam, you know, the Jamuna River, the holy Dham. Other than that, everything you're dealing with, including your own body, is straight material energy. So we shouldn't hear the thing, oh, it's mundane, we don't care. The mouth that just said that is as mundane as it gets. The brain that thought that is mundane. It's all mundane. You don't have anything else that you're dealing with other than mundane, unless you're dealing directly with the spiritual energy, through the name, the deity, the Bhagavatam, the preaching. You don't have. So therefore, now the consideration is what kind of material energy you want to work with? Superior or inferior? That's all. Vedic is superior. Contemporary is inferior. Right? So, same time as one can say, yes, but what about Yukta Vairagya? Yes, just like the material energy is the inferior and the soul is superior. So if the soul engages the inferior in the Lord's service, then one makes advancement. So in the same way as through the Vedic understanding, one may engage the contemporary elements and to advantage in Krishna consciousness. But they're not engaged with the contemporary mentality. They're engaged from the Vedic, from the devotional. Right? Because Prabhupada Krishna is saying in the Gita, perform your duties, right, in knowledge with devotion. Right? Modern doesn't give you knowledge. Right? We can say that boldly. The modern does not teach you why it's being done. Think about it. Anything that you do that is of the contemporary nature, think about why is it done? Why is it in that form? Can you say? No. You can give a general, but you can't really say. Because there's no knowledge. So it can be engaged, but it has to have the knowledge of the Vedic. Therefore, lame man, blind man. The West is blind, but still has energy, can move around. But so therefore, it's guided by the knowledge of the Shastra. Then it's potent. Right? That's Yukta Vairagya. Yukta Vairagya doesn't mean using it. Why? The karmas are using it. Why is that? Is that Yukta Vairagya? No. You're using it for Krishna. Is it for Krishna? Are you sure it's for Krishna? You say it's for Krishna. Right? But is it? So how do you judge? Is it just up to us to decide? Do we know who Krishna is? Do we know what Krishna likes? Do we know what is devotion? No, we learn from Guru. So then according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, then we judge what we're doing. Then we can say, yes, with confidence we can say, yes, this is for Krishna. Right? I'm engaging the Vedic, I'm engaging the modern, but it's for Krishna. Then we can be confident. Why be unconfident? That's what we were saying in the beginning. Without confidence, there's no commitment. And without commitment, you will not get results. Whatever you do, it must be committed. That doesn't mean stupid, right? It's with thoughtful. Committed means it's thought, it's determination. So that means an activity performed with knowledge, with devotion, means it's thoughtful. One's committed. One's using one's intelligence. One's using the heart. Right? And one is getting the work done. So the mind, the intelligence, the body are all performing. They're all committed. So what we see here is that all this is getting the work done. They're receiving a great personality, so that respect is there. It creates an environment of respect by all this paraphernalia and endeavor. And it says, saturated with affection and veneration for the person received. So that's where the soft side is. So the two come together. Because someone may say, it's not, what do you call it? So many rules, you know, it's dry, it doesn't have the... But where is anywhere in your life the most liberal person that their life doesn't work by a set of rules? Raise your hand. Every meeting that I see in the where we're using modern technique of facilitation, we have to start the meeting with, don't rely on your position, everyone should give an equal say to everyone, don't, right? That's a ritual. And it happens every meeting. You meet someone on the road, Hari Bol, that's a ritual. You know, everything you do is a ritual. We may feel we're very liberal, broad-minded, we don't get caught up. No, everything you do is a ritual. And anybody who does something outside of your ritual is seen as strange, or different, or something to be wary. Right? Very few are so comfortable with their own identity that they can accommodate, I do what I do, and anybody else can do whatever they do, and it doesn't bother me. Very rare, that person. Therefore, you have to have the social things. Satya Yuga, you didn't need it. Everyone is fully satisfied in their identity. You don't have to have a social structure. Because when you're satisfied, you automatically give the other person space. When you're not satisfied, it has to be all your way or the highway. So therefore, you try to get as many people on the highway, and I mean on your way, and then very few are on the highway, because highways are very expensive, you know. It's like a crore of rupees per kilometer or something. It's not cheap. So therefore, then, they would work for that. That's why community is there. A set of persons have a common value system that they can function together, and they don't think anybody else is weird, because no one wants to be the weird person. You're fully satisfied in who you are, you couldn't care if people think you're weird or not. But if it makes other people feel weird, you don't mind fitting in with them. But you don't need to. That person's independent. So this whole thing is, it must be complete. Right? It must be complete. So the idea is, once committed, that means you've thought about it, you're satisfied with who you are, you're satisfied with what you're doing and everything, and because of that, then you are able to function in the society. So then here we see is that then all this paraphernalia then is very auspicious. Conch shells, flowers, incense, decorated elephants, qualified Brahmins reciting verses from the Vedic literatures. And then this is, Prabhupada says, very sincere on both the receiver and the givers. Because then it's such an interaction, the interaction goes very, very nicely. Okay. Any questions on this? Yes.
Regarding relationships, you said that we talk so much about relationships in the material world, but rarely are they actually relationships. So in the material world, when does a relationship become a relationship?
When does a relationship become a relationship in the material world? Yeah, because we threw up that doubt that there's not so much real. Basically, when it's based on the principles of duties. When there's a respect for the other person you're interacting with. If there's no respect, you don't actually have a relationship. Because relationships start as santa rasa. at neutrality. Neutrality means you have a respect or an appreciation for the other person. Based on that, if that appreciation gets greater, then you can turn into servitorship, greater again, friendship, like this. But without appreciation or respect, you don't have relationship. So much of the time you see is that externals of how to not kill each other is worked into interaction. But since there's no appreciation, it's not actually a relationship. Means we're adding to our world the other person, how we want. And as long as they follow that, great. They're submissive to it, but if they at any point aren't submissive to it, then it's a problem for us. It immediately becomes a problem. So that's where you have to identify is what is the quality that we're functioning at? Like that. Because the point is the soul needs relationship. And because of material life, then we have a tendency to think about ourselves. That's why we come here. We want to be the center. Relationship means that something else has to be the center. Right? Or it has to be a center and then somebody else is around that, somebody else is around that. But no one person can be the center except Krishna. So there must be something else that's common. You know, like the child, maybe what's common for the mother and father. Or, you know, the gaining of economic development, maybe what's common for, you know, business persons or peace or, certain sovereignty, political sovereignty may be there for those who are dealing in that field. Or the gaining of knowledge may be then why student and teacher work together, like that. There's always, it's called Sunday, like that. What's the?
Denominator.
It's common denominator. The Vedas, Taittiriya Upanishad describes it. What's it? But in the Siksha Bali, all those Sundays are there. But what's the first one? I'm saying what's the first word of that?
Purarupa,
Uttara Rupa, Sunday. Yeah, Purarupa, Uttara Rupa, Purva Rupa, Uttara Rupa, and the Sunday. Just like the what's the sky and the earth? The heavenly planets and the, which is. It's been a long time. The sky and the earth. The sky is the full form of space. The earth is then the lesser form of space, right? Because it's less on it. It's subservient to that. Because it fits within that. Though it's different. So then it's there. And then the meeting. Are you sure it's that? Huh? Water is where they meet. Yeah, because you have water here and from the sun and all that, then the water goes up and that makes connection. So the water comes from here and then the rain comes back to here. So water is the connection. So the whole Vedas work on this principle. And I give a few like this, but it's all like that. That's the forms of it. So you have a full form. Then you have a subsidiary form, right? Because you have to have subject and object, right? If you want to have a sentence, if you want to express an idea, you have to have a subject and an object. It may be obvious, it may be hidden, you know, direct or indirect, but it has to be there. No subject, no object, nothing. You don't have a sentence. You don't have an idea. So therefore, the subject is the primary, the object is the secondary. And something connects them. That's an activity. Something's going on. So the whole world functions like that. That's just how it works. Of course, that's a grammarian's view, but it works. That's one of the ways to approach to understand how the material world functions is through grammar. Like that, because the Vedic grammar is logical, so it works.
Yes, principle is also there in relationships.
In relationships, it's always there. Like you take parent and child. The parent will be, in one sense, the primary, the child the secondary. Because the parent is the field in which the child functions. Right? But at the same time is that interaction, the parent with the child, what it gains from that is the reason for its interaction.
Huh? The etymological meaning of Latin meaning of relation or relation.
Huh.
Re means to do it again. mm-hmm. and relaxing into the relation of religion, religion. Mm-hmm. So what's the relationship towards love?
Of course, yeah. Prahlad Nisringaprabhu is making the point that originally there was some relationship, and whatever is going on in this society as we know it, at some point, if you take it back, you know, either tens or hundreds of thousands of years, you did get to some point to a relationship because it was based on some Vedic principle. I mean, like Prabhupada mentions how, like, South America is where Ravana is. Brother Kumbhakarna used to stay. Kumbhakarna? No, Mahimar Ravana. I think Kumbhakarna also.
Yeah.
They even have a festival today for him. I got a different name for him. But, huh? Mahumba. Okay, so see, he's still alive and well over in Brazil. Right? So, these things are going on. And so then, you know, yeah, so at one point it was. That's our point. So if you go back, the Vedas is where it's connected, the closest that you can see as a social, big, great social function. Its life, though, is the Bhagavad, the Lord and His name, the devotion. That's what makes it nice. It's interesting, here is one of the words. Pranayagata, saturated with affection. Because prana means life. So affection means life. You know, that there's, it's got life to it, then it's got some meaning. So one's trying to get to that relationship, but one has to see is that, what is the duties? If the duties are in place, one focuses on that, performs those duties, that's where one's going to taste emotion. Because when we talk relationship, generally we're talking emotion. You know, we're generally not talking just economics or sensuality. In reality, that may be what we're getting. But it's, we talk emotion. But emotion is tasted when duty is performed. We've done what we know we're supposed to do for the relationship, and the other person has reciprocated that. That endeavor, that's called relationship. And that endeavor will give you the taste that you're looking for. So that's why the Vedas always talk about give duties on everything, because then you know have some platform to work from, and the other person works from there, you perform that, you get the result. You know? So it'd be just like, I'd like to cook. Oh, what are you going to cook? Well, I want to make some puris. Okay, so you need a karai, or a wok, you need some ghee, you need a rolling pin, you need a board, you need that. Why so many things? Why can't I just cook? You know, why do I have to be restricted? Why can't I use a skillet? Or why can't I use the oven to deep fry the puris? You know, I like ovens. I don't like karais. You know, they're round, they fall over. Ovens are very solid like that. No trouble, you just push the button, it works. You know, why can't I deep fry my puris there? It's kind of like, hello. You know, so that's the whole thing, is we say, is, oh, you want a relationship. Oh, and what relationship? Oh, okay, so then these are the duties, these are the tools that you use to taste that relationship. Otherwise, how are you going to taste it? Right? Because even if you don't, you're still going to have rules. Right. Even the malechas and yavanas in the grossest scenario, they still have rules. Like that. So that's the point. You follow the rules, you taste something. But because it's inferior rules, the taste won't be as good as if you follow superior rules. That's all. Rules have to be followed. Otherwise, how do you know you're getting what you want? Right? If the person does this, then I know I've gotten something. Right? That's how you, either way, how do you judge? Right? And then, when that's gotten, then the experience you get from that, that's what you're looking for. Right? That interaction. You did something for them, they did reciprocated that for you. Then there's a relationship. And you gain what you're looking for. You get what that taste that you're trying to get. So it has to be something observable. Right? Either by the senses or by the mind. You know? There's a feeling one gets, but it has to be observable. If everything happened and there was no feeling, you wouldn't say, hey, that was great. You know, it's either the object itself is what you want because you want the object, getting it, then you say, now I'm happy, I achieved my want. Or the experience of the situation, then you gain something. In other words, without gain, you're not going to say that you got anywhere. So, how do you gain? Right? You want to put a nail into the wall. What do you use? Right? A butter knife and a carrot? No, you got to use a hammer and a nail. Then it works, but then you're restricted. You have to use a hammer and you have to use a nail. But why can't I use a carrot? In fact, I don't like carrots, but I like cauliflowers. You know? So, why not a cauliflower? Why do I have to be restricted to a nail? You know? You know, so that's the principle that happens. Is it sounds great? Which would you rather have, a nail or a cauliflower? Right? You take the cauliflower, why not? Sounds great. So if you speak nicely, that's the thing in Kali Yuga, you speak nicely, it sounds great. But that doesn't mean it is great. Yeah, so that's the thing, it becomes useless. So relationship, then we're looking for something, otherwise you're not there. Right? You take talking relationship, community. You see, how many devotees have come to the community? Right? And how many have left? And then those who have come, why are they coming? And those who have left, why are they leaving? Because one is they see the prospect of fulfillment of their needs, you know, whatever spiritual, and they're leaving because they didn't find it. So they know that something's there and they're trying to get, but if you don't know the science, how will you get? Maybe you have it, you don't know it. Right? The father leaves so many valuable things to the son. But the son is immature. He doesn't think it's important. Like that. But when he matures, then he sees, my father left me the greatest things. So that's the thing. Unless you know, it doesn't mean. Little kids can sit out there and, you know, play with their mother's pearls and this and that. And, you know, it could be marbles. It could be jelly beans. It doesn't matter to them. Jelly beans are better. You can eat them. Right? Yeah. So, but unless you know, that's the whole thing. Without training, we don't know. But due to our false ego, and especially the Western concept, the Anglo-Saxon concept of the maverick, you only have it in the Anglo-Saxon cultures. All other cultures, there's the idea that you have to be trained and qualified. It's only the Anglo-Saxon that the maverick, he just feels like, and he turns from the complete 90-pound weakling, wimp, absolutely useless, can't do anything, and then he turns the next moment, he becomes the godfather. Like that. It's every movie, everything, useless, completely no qualification, bang, he's on the top, just because he felt like it. You know, the guy ate his fish. And that completely freaked him out, and then he becomes the man. You know? And it's something like that, you know? It's gotta be something, you know? You know, kill the guy's girlfriend, you know, eat his fish, you know? You have to do something like that, and it creates an emotion, and that emotion perfects their life, and then they become this superhuman, super intelligent, super everything that he wasn't before, just because he feels it. But, yeah, he shows it. Same time, something to learn from this. What happened? He kills the girlfriend. He forgets about everything else. He focuses. Therefore, he goes out and does all the things he does. Because it's focus. Right? So, there's still something to learn from it. But the point is there's something missing. So, it sounds great. People are willing to pay money to hear such things because it's inspiring to them. Because they may not have any qualification, they don't want to get it, they don't see the need for it, but there is the hope that just one day somebody will say something or do something, I'll be so inspired that I'll just get out there and become that, you know, super person. You know? That hero, you know, person. You know? So like that, it's always like that, you know. Something fell on your head, some kryptonite, or, you know, something, you just turn into this special person. You know? Like that. Problem is, what does the guy do? There's no phone booths anymore. You know, they've removed all the phone booths. What are you doing?
They've removed the doors.
Yeah, no phone booths. Like that. That's I never thought of that. What does the guy do nowadays? No phone booths. You know. Does that make some sense? Okay. So the thing is relationships then. It's a matter of what is a relationship is there because the other person, you have a need, they have a need. So the Vedic concept is know actually what your needs are and what your needs aren't. You know, like a student, their needs are not having, you know, a boyfriend or a girlfriend and having a job. They don't need that. If you want to be a student, you don't need that. You know, you need a good teacher, you need time to study, you need something to keep you physically active, you have to have some way to apply that knowledge you're getting. That's what they need if you want to be a student. So the Vedas have to teach you. You're a student, you identify as a student, this is what you actually need. Otherwise, you think you need the world. But then, when they get the world, they don't study. Right? That's the thing. You can't be taking your girlfriend out to the movies and be studying your homework. It doesn't work. So, you know, it's like, this is what you need. The grihastha then needs, you know, to have a woman, has to have a house, and have all the paraphernalia for taking care of that. The brahmachari doesn't need it. So you have to know what are your needs. So it says, what are your needs? And it also says, once you can understand what your needs are, then you have an identity, then you're focused. Then you say, this is what another person's needs are. Okay? Then you can understand that. Then you can say, okay, now this is how your needs and their needs combine. Because it's different. Right? Shudra meets a Shudra is different than Shudra meets a Vaishya. Shudra meets a Kshatriya. Shudra meets a Brahmin. Right? Or Vaishya meets a Vaishya, Vaishya meets a Kshatriya, Kshatriya meets a Brahmin, or Kshatriya, 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 Brahmin, or Brahmins. Their interaction is different because their needs are different. And then you add into that the ashrams, and you have a lot of combinations. So that's the sign, you know, know means who you are. There's all this talk about me and the Ibbet, who is that you? Go ahead, describe it. Who is that you? I do what I want to do. What do you want to do? What do you need? Well, you know, what I feel. What do you feel? You know, you can just keep asking these questions. You'll find out you get a lot of hollow answers. Absolutely hollow. Absolutely hollow. You know, so that's the whole thing. Know who you are. You know, so that you do. You don't compromise the soul. And you don't compromise your conditioned nature. Right? Then it works for you. But in doing that, you can't have the world because your needs are limited. Stick to those needs, you get result. Right? You know, it's just like if you try to do 10 things at once, it won't be successful if you do one thing at once. So in the same way as the idea is not to fulfill hundreds of needs, you know, in a not very good way. It's better is to fulfill a few needs properly. Does that make sense? So that's how it functions. Okay. Last question. You had a question? Yeah.
I have one comment. Because we are in Kali Yuga, it's very normal because we are in Kali Yuga, no? And then the more important in the relationship is
forgiveness. So Mataji is making a comment that she heard Radhanath Maharaj had mentioned that because people fight in Kali Yuga so much, so therefore forgiveness is the most important quality to make relations work. Because if you can forgive, then things can function. So if you combine that, what we were saying, if you do the right things, then there's less times you have to be forgiven. But still, forgiveness must be there. Because we see in the Vedic culture, even someone perfectly performs the duties, many times something comes up and there must be forgiveness. There must be understanding and tolerance and all that. Because you know the other person's nature. So you know, they will act like that. You know, the dog barks and slobbers. You know, that's the way they do. You know, so it's just, you know the nature, so therefore it wants tolerance. Okay, so then we'll end the class now, and then if anyone would like to stay after for any further discussion, then we can do that. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samanita Bhaktivedanta ki, Jainita Gaurav Premana.
The problem that Bhagavad Gita mentioned is Kaya
on changing words.
Yeah. Yeah. So Srila Prabhupada also did very specific orders, very specifically, really easy to see what he intended. But sometimes we try to, again,
twist it.
Yeah. So how we can just keep it really as it is.
How to keep it as it is.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's giving a... Prahlada Srinivasa Prabhu is giving another, another example of like this, by changing the words it sounds right. Says previously they talked about global warming, it was a big problem, but and the difficulty was is that because of petrol and all those things, but now because it's still very popular, now one refers to global warming as weather change in the weather change. So weather change is so broad you can't focus on it. So you don't connect it that by the global warming that it throws off, you know, because it's between heat and cold is where you get your weather patterns. So then you change the heat and cold difference, you get a different weather. So then it's not thought about so much. There's some concern for the weather, but it's kind of like, you know, it rains when you didn't want, you know, it happens. So you're kind of used to it. Global warming is something that doesn't happen. It's unnatural. But weather change, weather is always changing. So you're already used to something that you've already agreed to. So that's the concept of spin doctrine. You take a principle that people already have agreed to, then you change the context a little bit. You know, you've gone... You know, you go A, B, B, C, C, D. You take people through very nice. Like that. You find something everyone will say yes to. It's a standard form of diplomacy. You find a standard point that everybody agrees to. Cleansing. Everyone likes things clean. Right? Like that. And ethnics, you know, ethic is something, you know, nowadays people are into, you know, ethics and ethical, or ethnic, you know, something ethnic is very, so, you know, cleansing ethnically sounds great, you know. So I'll take 2 kilos. You know? So then he's asking, so how to avoid that? Prabhupada has been very specific in his points to avoid doing the same thing, you know, misjudging or misapplying. Basically, one needs to see. I mean, there's two. One is technically what Prabhupada's talking about, because there is a tradition and culture and philosophy that's very specific, very scientific. So the words are as close as you can get to the contemporary situation. It may or may not fully represent, but it gives an indication, you know, because basically words give an indication, especially in something like English. It gives an indication. It doesn't really describe the object, you know, but it gives a general indication. So then one needs to know what exactly Prabhupada's talking about and what that means, what the result, the whole thing. Because here he's saying, Prabhupada's talking about the rituals, the paraphernalia. It says, the auspicious atmosphere of such a reception depends on the paraphernalia described above. But in that, then it is saturated with affection and veneration, and the reception is full of sincerity. So generally we think paraphernalia, then it's got to be this, and no, it's the sincerity in that. And this, you always get this polarity. Like, you know, one of the strongest you can see is, you can see it all over. You know, you have the Sampradayic Vaishnavas, and you have the Upper Sampradayas. Upper Sampradayas are generally all in the moods in this, like that. And the others are more into following the tradition. You know, or you have Catholicism and the Protestants. You know, one is just Bhav, the mood, that's all that's important. The other one is, no, that must be the form is also important. Because the form invokes the mood. You know, so like that, you always get this. But the thing is that you have to have both. Niyamagraha means you go too far one side or too far the other. You only follow the rules for rules' sake, or you don't care for the rules and it's just what you feel like. But the point is it should be that one's feelings can be expressed through the rules. Right? Because the rules are only there because we don't know what is culture. Otherwise, why do you have to? And even then, even you do know what is culture and you're perfect, still there's training. In the spiritual world, one is still trained how to serve Krishna. Even though one has natural love for him, is still refining that. There's more. Radharani's always, she's expert, or master, let's say, she is master in the 64 arts. Right? There's 3 levels of knowledge you could be. I think we discussed this a little last. You can be knowledgeable in a subject, you can be expert in a subject, you can be master in a subject. Right? So knowledgeable means you can take part or you can do it a little bit. You can assist someone else who knows well because you have knowledge, or you can do it on a very small scale. Simple things of that branch of knowledge. Expert means you're fully qualified to perform the activity. Master means that and beyond. You have realization, so then you can actually teach. So we see amongst the gopis that they are all masters in something, experts in something, and knowledgeable in something. Someone may be expert in mridanga, another one is knowledgeable in mridanga, another is master in mridanga. The one who's master is the one who teaches, the other is how to play mridanga. So they're always learning new ways to serve Krishna. And that's there. You know? Otherwise there's this idea, oh, it's just, you know, just Hari Bhav and just run it, that's the maverick. We'll just be in the spiritual world, it's all perfect, it's all good. It is, but that's because we have the association of devotees who've trained us. Right? That's the point. Is we acknowledge that training, we accept that training is valuable for us, then you get closer to Krishna. We don't, then we fall away from Krishna. We're willing to be trained, we move towards Krishna. We're not willing to be trained, we move away. That's how we got ourselves here. We weren't willing to be trained. that. Rijas, I want that. So we can see is that the maverick culture is the prominent mundane culture. Right? And that's the culture that's taking over the world, because it's the lowest. It's what got us here. So that's what Maya presents to keep us here. Like that.
Why we should try the carrot and the paradise? And we already know in every ashram and every situation we have instructions laid out.
Yeah, no we do. So yeah, the point is instructions are laid out. So also then how to keep, we were on the how to keep to that. So one is to know the knowledge that he's talking about, the actual body of knowledge. But that must be seen in light of what's the spirit. Right? Then there's the application. Because in presentation of any point, there must be five aspects. This is called Panchanga Nyaya. It means any conversation, you know, that's based on Shastra must have these five aspects. Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur talk on this extensively. You make a point, then you expand on that point. In expanding on that, so the first is you make the point. That's your thesis. Then the second aspect is you expand on that to explain it. It's like a purport, simplified purport. And that creates the antithesis. Like that. Because there's two basically presentations of Nyaya. One is by Gotama, one is by Vyas. So people will take it, there's two systems and they'll fight over it. No, the Prabhupada uses both. The Acharyas use both. Is by explaining, that's where you get. If I just say, today's good, then it's kind of like, well, based on what? You know, because the sun's out. So now I've explained it. I come to the second. That can create the doubt. Well, why the sun being out makes it good? You know? So then like that. So then that brings you to the third, where you're explaining it, you give your example. And in giving your example, then you establish the second point. You explain, it's the purport on your purport, you know, it's a practical application of your purport, and you destroy the doubt. Then you conclude the doubt, because the doubt's only on part of it. The doubt is on the second part. You know? So then, and then that's the fourth part. Yeah, no, it's the conclusion of the doubt. It means, in other words, you've made, your statement is made in the first, then you give an expansion on that explanation, and then the third is you give an example of that. Fourth is you show how that example and all that, you make it practical, and fifth is then the siddhanta, your conclusion of the whole thing. So in that, the second part where you give explanation, that may create doubt, then you have to remove the doubt. The doubt has its explanation. Right? So your example has to cut the explanation of the doubt. Right? Doubt comes in the second level. So in the third level then comes the explanation of the doubt. In other words, you have thesis and then you have the expansion on that and your example. And the antithesis comes in at the second point, so then they have to have their expansion. So your example has to cut their explanation. Then you bring that together, you synthesize it, their point and your point. Because there's a common point. If you want to get rid of something, you have to find a common point, because then they're on the same platform as you. Like that. Then you then give the conclusion, how the bigger picture now. You know, which includes practical application, everything like that. So we see that Prabhupada does these all the time. Yeah, that also, it means the very nice was that one here. This is the purport to last week's class. So here's the point. Lord Krishna's attractive, here, verse. Oh, Master, if you live abroad all the time, then we cannot look at your attractive face, whose smiles vanquish all our sufferings. How can we exist without your presence? Upon hearing their speeches, the Lord, who is very kind to the citizens and the devotees, entered the city of Dwarka and acknowledged all their greetings by casting his transcendental glance over them. Right? So then the ukta, or the main point, then is attraction. They're attracted to Krishna, therefore all this is going on. So then Prabhupada makes the statement, Lord Krishna's attraction is so powerful that once being attracted by him, one cannot tolerate separation from him. So that's his theory. I mean, that's his thesis. Then it goes to the second point. Why is this so? So that can be positive or it can be a doubt. But your explanation should clear the doubt. So you might even use the doubt as a way to introduce it, or you just may more simply just do it like this way. You know, yeah, you're just taking it to the next. Because, so now second point, because we are eternally related with him as the sun rays are eternally related with the sun disk. Right? We are eternally related with him, and then he gives an example of that. Right? So that's the three. Then he goes on. The sun rays are molecular parts of the solar radiation. Thus the sun rays and the sun cannot be separated. So we are eternally related with him. So he's given the example of the sun. So this proves that. Separation by the cloud is temporary and artificial. So now he's showing the antithesis. Because the antithesis is, no, but you're saying, you know, the sun and the sun's rays, but when the clouds come, then they're separated. Already there's a doubt. You know, okay, then Krishna's all attractive, but when Maya comes in the way, he's not attractive anymore. We're attracted to Maya. So how is this, you know, the cloud of Maya has come? You say we're attracted naturally, we're connected naturally. But no, the doubt is no, but I'm here and I don't see God. What's the big deal? What's the attraction? You know? The separation by the cloud is temporary and artificial. So this is the other side. He presented the first three on his side. Now he's going back and showing the second of the other side. And their example, their cloud. Separation by the cloud is temporary and artificial. As soon as the cloud is cleared, the sun rays again display their natural effulgence in the presence of the sun. Okay, so then that's your example. Now he's applying it. Similarly, now this is like before, the living entities who are molecular parts of the whole spirit are separated from the Lord by the artificial covering of Maya, illusory energy. This illusory energy, the curtain of Maya, has to be removed, and when it is so done, the living entity can see the Lord face to face, and all his miseries are at once removed. Every one of us wants to remove the miseries of life, but we do not know how to do it. Right? And then he gives the conclusion here. The solution is given here, and it rests on us to assimilate it or not. So, Lord Krishna's attraction is so powerful that once being attracted by him, one cannot tolerate separation from him. So, but that depends upon us whether we want to move in that direction or not. Right? Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, the sun is allowing us to be attracted. Yeah. So does that make sense? If we keep to that we'll get to that. If we keep to the point that Prabhupada's giving this, and it's a scientific presentation. It's not that it's arbitrary. It's not that, well, Prabhupada didn't know, or English wasn't his language. But Sanskrit is. And Sanskrit is so far advanced to English. You know, English is a street language. It used to be a little more sophisticated, but with time it's becoming more and more just a common language. Right? If you go back, use nice words, they're called archaic. Right? A lot of the words that I've learned, I know from my mother, that she used. I look in the dictionary now, they're called archaic. Why? Because they're 100 years old. You know? So something's lost. So it's not that it's not. Prabhupada knows. He knows language. So therefore, he's able to present what he means. So then it's a matter of trying to find what is he talking about. What actually is he talking about? So then there's a method there. You know, so in that verse, what is the ukta? That will be in the subjective case. Then you know that attraction is what is being talked about. We'll just take, oh, Prabhupada's talking about attraction here. No, but he's talking about attraction because that's the point of the verse. So he's presenting the whole scientific method of Krishna consciousness. So then we know that, then we see the culture, how is that applied? Then we know, that's why we gotta take the two. Otherwise then we're against rules, then we'll take the rules, but then we take the rules like smartness. So that's the thing, is the tendency is either we're smartists or we're liberals, right? You're right-wing, you know, reactionaries or bleeding-heart liberals, you know, I mean. But the point is the middle is the actual situation. Because there's times to be very kind and broad, and there's times to be very strict. It's not that it's always all conservative or it's always liberal. No, that doesn't work. There's times when you're supposed to be liberal and there's times when you're supposed to be strict. And you'll find that in the two parties, they're opposite. Where the conservatives are liberal, that's where the liberals are conservative. Yeah, so the point is there's things that one works better in the situation than the other works better. Some situations it's better to be conservative, some situations it's better to be liberal. So that's the Vedas. They tell what is that middle path. And that must be heard then through the Acharya. We can't just read any Vedic literature and do with it what we want. We have to do with it as Prabhupada gives it. Otherwise we'll also miss the point, because the Vedic culture, its point is not to follow the Vedic culture. The Vedic culture's point is to go back to Godhead. That's its point. That's what it's for. So if you don't go back to Godhead, it doesn't have a meaning. That's why it's all thrown out at some point. The Uttama doesn't have to follow it. Because it's not what you're trying to do. You're trying to develop your love for Krishna. But to set example, he will show the method, how what is the medium through which others can do that. So one has to do that, yeah?
You were speaking about when you're put over mentally into an activity and you do it properly, then you get, then you become satisfied. And I was thinking about, like, in terms of service, to say I've had experience that many times I'll give a service, okay, here is your service, you're going to, and it doesn't matter what, anything, like cook for these, then it's like, okay, you know how to cook.
You can boil water without burning it. So,
yeah. Yeah, okay, sure. You know, and then you just go there and then you try to cook, but you don't really, you can go so far, you know, you can learn something from the book, but ultimately, like, there's something missing, you know, and maybe there's, like, some dissatisfaction that, you know, no one actually taught me how to cook. You just kind of learn yourself, and maybe there's people who know how to cook.
Okay, how do you get full satisfaction from a service if you're not trained? Now, here's one of our caveats that we got to put. When we say satisfaction, it means as satisfied as you can get from the conditioned nature. You can never actually be satisfied in the material world like that. So it shouldn't be that. But we're talking about, since we are looking for things to work nicely, and we're comfortable if things work nicely, then, you know, there's a satisfaction there. One's done one's best, or one's gotten the best result one can. So in this, then, that was the idea before, is self-realization means knowing who you are. So you have to know what is your nature. So now, the question is, in here, the example has been given that cooking, okay, so you're told to cook, you don't really know how to cook, you're cooking and it's not so good, you're a little dissatisfied. So now, one has to see is, okay, is cooking the nature? Right? One is there's service according to nature, there's service according to what needs to be done. Right? So if it's an emergency situation, then you do service according to what needs to be done, whether it's nature or not. But one knows that in the future one will adjust that and try to make it more ideal. But if there is option, then you see, if cooking is something that you have the nature for, you have the nature to go into it to the depth of knowledge, knowledgeable in the subject, expert in the subject, or mastery of the subject. Right? So if it's beyond knowledgeable, then you'll apply your intelligence, you'll work it out. You know what I'm saying? Because a cook can hear a recipe, or even hear part of a recipe and figure it out. You know, so it's not a matter they have to come to the temple and show you how to cook it and hold it like that. No, you just said, hey, you know, 3 Sunday feasts ago, you cooked a great halava. What did we know? What proportions did you use? And they'll tell the proportions, or how much did you roast the grains, or did you put the age old dichotomy? Do you put the fried grains into the water, or the water into the fried grains? There's 2 theories there, you know. So then, like that, there's probably as many recipes for halva as there are, you know, good cooks. You know, if you add in the bad ones, you get a lot more. But you know, ones that are, you know, one would consider memorable. You know, well, actually, bad ones could be memorable also. This is the point of logic. You have to say exactly what you mean. Worth remembering in a positive way, you know, other than the bad one was so funny that everybody... So, then you work it out that way. Then you try it. And by doing it again and again and again through practice, then you'll get it. His point is that if you've taken up the service of cooking, you do cooking the best you can. You figure out how to do it by what resources you have available. I mean, every devotee has the experience that, you know, they were just turned into a pujari or a cook or a book distributor or anything, you know, with anywhere from, you know, like a 30-second, you know, introduction or a complete course by the previous person who was doing it. And sometimes they don't even have that. You just get a pep talk by the, you know, temple president because the cook did disappear and there's no one there to even tell you, you know, which end of the spoon you're supposed to hold on to. But, you know, you kind of figure it out. You know, the small end's a little easier than the big end. You know, it's like, you know. Does that make some sense? So you have to judge both against nature and then to how, to what degree you can go into it. And then if it's, and whatever it is, you go for that much. Does that make sense? If you don't know, you just try it, you'll figure it out. But the endeavor has to be made, since you are the cook, so therefore do it. Do your best. And, you know, people say it's too much salt, not enough salt, change it. Don't get into an ego trip, because you want, if you're determined, you want it to be good. So it's not a matter of, you know, I'm working so hard, you know, you got this, that, you don't understand. That doesn't make you any better cook. It's like, oh, it's too much salt? Okay, put a little less. The next time, oh, no salt? Okay, you got to put a little more. You know? The next time, it's, you know, if you put 1 grain more, it would be too much. Okay, put, you know, 1 grain less. You know, then you get it. You know, you see the devotees like it. You made this nice sabji and it's got a... Afterwards, you know, they have to, you know, how you say, spoon, you know, drain it on the side and everybody eats that. Then you know, okay, put less water. Or you didn't put any water, okay, then you cook it without the lid on it. Or, you know, or you use a wider pot that will steam off quicker. Or you put something else and it'll make it thicker. Or, you know, you figure out, okay, devotees don't like watery sabjis. Don't make them. You know? You know, devotees don't, oh, it's so heavy, it's so, learn how to cook lighter. Get the same flavor lighter. So then you work it out. So like that, you just use your intelligence and you apply it. And with practice, you'll get it. Because some basic knowledge is there. Right? heat appropriately applied to edible ingredients, you know, results in a cooked item. You know? So now details then you work out. Does that make sense?
What I'm hearing is you just have a little knowledge, you have thinking.
Yes, if you have the ability.
If you have the nature.
If you have the nature, yes. But you'll come to the best, in other words, if you, yeah, okay, so the question, could hear? Yeah? You heard what he said? Yeah. No? Saying that if you have that commitment, you have some knowledge, then you'll come to the platform of expert. Means you'll come to the level of whatever's your nature, but you'll be satisfied with what your nature is. Right? You know what I'm saying? In other words, if cooking to you is like a hobby, then you become as good as you can in it, and then when you're as good as you can and there's no, if someone else can do it, then you have someone else do it. You know? And depending on what your level of particular personal, how you say it, nature is, then it may be not knowledgeable is enough. You have a, you know, you know which side of the wok to put up, you know, the part with the hole, the bowl side goes up, you know, the bottom side goes down, and, you know, stuff like that, and you gotta, you know, hey, you know, I can cook a puri, you know, like that, you know, they may not be round, they may not always puff up, but, you know, hey, you know, it's better than the hole in the head, right? So then, you know, it's good enough. Like that, you know, maybe the other devotees have to hire one, you know, someone else to cook. But the point is you're satisfied because it's as good as you can do. If you're not satisfied, it means you can do more. Right? Just like somebody knows a few recipes very nicely, you'll find they only cook those preparations because that's all the broader they think of in menus. So, as far as the community is concerned, they're an expert cook. But they only cook 5 preparations. But they're 5 preparations everybody likes. So whenever there's a feast or program, then they cook those things, everyone's happy. In one sense, they're an expert cook. But at the same time, as they're expert in a few things only. You know? They're not technically full manifestation of an expert. But they're sophisticated, so what they do it right. But they only have so much time or that, so they only know that much. Then it's just a matter of, if they had the time, would they learn more? If they would, then they will. But the situation doesn't need it and doesn't present itself, they don't. Or it could be, no, 5 preparations is enough. You know. Like that. So if someone else, no, they have to know all these different things, or they want to know how to cook all the preparations in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, like this. So then they just, whatever is the one's depth, one goes. But one must use endeavor with intelligence. That's enthusiasm. So one has to use the brain. That is good. Does that make sense? Is that practical?
Yeah.
Yeah. But still, it takes brain from yourself to use someone else's brain. Yeah. But, yeah, the point is others have knowledge, they know more, learn from them. They have the brains, they have the experience, so learn from them. But learn not on, if you're determined, you learn on whatever terms the other person's willing to do it as. Or whatever terms that are compatible. You have your idea what teaching means. You know, they have their idea of how they can help you. You know, you just see what can work and get that much. But if it's like, you're there, you've been made to cook, and so many other good cooks are there, but they're all busy in other services, and then nobody will teach, no one will spend the time, you know, we're doing this, it's such an important service, why nobody cares, this, that. Just go ask. You know, the point is, it's your service, you do it. They're doing something else, they're doing that. They're not going, you're going, no, but if we don't cook, then nobody eats, and then there'll be no sankirtan. Second, devotee says, hey, if I don't go out and collect, you're not cooking. You know. So each person could find their service to be the most important. So if everybody commits and just does it, then it works. A temple president's life is easy. Right? Temple president has the most problem. Basically, if you look at it, all his problems come when there's confusion. And so, therefore, there's not focus. Or, can be the focus is misdirected. But generally, if you look at it, that's the difficulties they have. So if everybody has the principle that they will be focused on what they do, life is easy. Then it's just a matter of focusing it all in the right direction, in a cooperative way. Is that okay? Yeah. Oh, yes, please.
It seems to me that before 1990s, in China, someone directly, if someone is a pure scientist, a surface type of thing, and there are so many cookbooks that are supposed to be written by not only experts but masters. So after you read them, and they ask for direct guidance, extra guidance, and the writers, but there's such a long way you can go just by getting the knowledge of the master who wrote the book.
Yeah, that's a good point. That Prabhu made the point is that there's so much, because giving example of the cooking, there's so much in books that have been written by expert cooks, those who are, you know, very accomplished in cooking. So by studying those, then you can gain so much. And then if you approach someone who's, you know, a live, you know, example of culinary science, who's available, then you'll get more from it. I mean, I've seen that myself, is that we were doing research in deity worship. And because it was starting the new research, you go in and you ask them some question. You go to an expert or a master, you ask a question. And they'll go, why don't you come here and stay with me for 3 months? It'll take that long to teach you. Like that. So that wasn't practical. So then we have to go, and then eventually you just sit down and read books, and then you start to see what are the principles involved that. Then you go back and then you ask just the exact point you want, and then the guy gives you the answer. But otherwise, then it's like, you know, you have to go there, and, you know, it's like, you know. Huh? Like that, you know. You ask a question like, how do you do puja? You know, then that's like, okay, you know, why don't you come and spend, you know, 6 months? But if you go, okay, in the puja, when you're offering the guru Punkti Namaskar, do you have to use flowers or can you not use flowers? Right? That kind of question is just immediately answerable. You know? It means if you have flowers, nice. If not, just the pranam is enough. Like that. So then it's very easy to, because you've worked out everything else, but there's the little key points. That's what the experts and masters hold. Is that, you know, okay, you want to put the farina into the water, or the water, how do you do that? You know, because you start pouring the water, and then there's so much steam, and then you want to stir it, but then you got to get the rest of the water, and then it starts to go into lumps, or it gets solid. You know, it's like, how do they do it?
It smells like.
Yeah. What is the trick? Someone is the feeling of the spoon on the bottom of the pan. That's how they know it's done. Someone else is by the color. Someone else is by the aroma. Someone else is by the sound. Like this Bhakti Chachari that Prabhupada gave the recipe for. He went by the sound and by smoke. Because smoke is, how do you say, opaque, you can't see through it. But steam, you can see through it. It's translucent. Same color. So you have to watch. You hear the sound and you see that the steam's turned into smoke. Then it's done. And I've heard other Indian cooks tell, I don't know it by the sound. I think I've heard it once or twice. I've noted it. I know it by, you know, physically going in there and scraping the bottom, and if it's got, you know, the, you know, 2 millimeters of charcoal on it, it's done. You know, if it's only brown, it's not done, and if it's got more than 2 millimeters, you got a problem. You know, but I've heard other cooks also say it makes this kind of, like they call it, creak 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 sound, because there's a sound of when there's no water. But there's oil and it's burning. As if there's no water and no oil, it has a different sound. But it's, with oil, then it's burning and frying. So it has a particular sound. So then they can tell what it is. So that trick is what makes it or not. Or what size you cut the vegetables, or what exact proportion. You know, it's like you have the cook, he has his favorite recipe. He'll use two parts, you know, whole wheat flour, one part white flour. Because the whole wheat makes a rougher puri. But to put some white flour, it's nice. If you put all white flour, you know, you roll it out, it shrinks again, you roll it out, it shrinks again. You know, like this. So they get something that works. Somebody uses 50-50. You know, like this. You know, we just learned a new one where people use farina. You know, a completely different kind of dough. So then, you know, some use hot water, some use cold water, so all these little tricks, that's what makes it. But you have to already know how to make dough. You have to already know what is flour. You know, what is a board? What are your hands? What is kneading? How to put salt. You know, you already have to know that. Then these little tricks make the difference. Does that make sense? So what Prabhu is saying is there's a lot you can do to educate yourself. There's a lot already available. Yeah, no, that's true. That's true. Yeah, yeah, that's true. What he's saying is that there's a lot of educational institutions that only if you have a certain amount of previous training they'll let you in.
Yeah.
Or homework, yeah. You've studied, you've done things. Otherwise, you won't get it. Okay, yes.
Not compromising your soul and conditioning. Soul and conditioning, is that where you have to know your needs? And but it seems that really this is the problem.
How to identify the conditioned nature?
Yeah, and most of us are clear about what our needs are.
How do you approach it if you don't know what to deal with, what the needs are?
Yeah.
Okay. Is that with every nature, there's a need. That's why that nature is there. In other words, brahmacharya is a method to fulfill a particular need. Grihastha is a situation and activities that fulfill a particular need. Like that, vanaprastha, sannyas, or Brahman, kshatriya, vaishya. They each have, that's the thing, is the Vedic culture is, you know, has all these nice modern terms, goal-oriented, all these different things, holistic, you know, all these things. But it's because it's already known, but it's so primeval and so perfect, and we're not used to it, that a lot of times we don't always catch how it functions. You know, because it just, the background is so different. Just like I noticed today, I was looking, went by, and plastered on the wall was, you know, a board that had on it all the, how you say, the declensions of the eight kinds of nouns. Like that. You know, whether it's the person doing it, the subjective, objective, locative, dative, accusative, what do you call possessive, you know, your genitive, all that was there. And because in English, they say it's there, but it's not really connected back. Because I know when I went to school, Latin was just there, but it was separated from English. You had English class and you had Latin. And so they didn't really teach English in comparison with it. So it didn't really mean anything to me, the declensions. So then, whenever I'd hear about it and start to study Sanskrit, you know, it just doesn't make sense. It's hard to grasp. You can't remember it because it doesn't have any value to you. And so then today, just came by and looking at it, but we've been doing a study in language. So now we understand this language works in these ways. That's the science of language. It works by the declension and conjugation of the verbs. That is the language. And that is tools to explain the point you want to make. You have a point you want to make, so that means it has elements in it, and those elements interact. The elements are the nouns, and the interaction is the verb. So now, then, how do you say? There are then these basic eight classifications of the nouns. And, you know, then you're by declension. And the verbs, then you get six, at least that apply in English. You get the three tenses and the three modals. And so then that covers it. And then you fill it in with your, you know, prepositions and conjugations. Conjunctions to hold it together. But that's actually what's going on in the language. So if you understand those few things, you understand how language works. Then it's just a matter of how much detail and knowledge you have to apply it. So then I looked at it today, and today it made sense that you just have these particular endings that are there, and you know that this ending means this thing. Because before it's just, okay, if it's Krishna's, then it's this ending, and it's this, is that. But it didn't mean that, no, there's only eight forms of nouns that have called declension. You know, so that's all you have to know is these eight forms. It's not unlimited, you know, and they have a purpose. They have a direct purpose. One shows who is doing the activity, who, what, why, where, how, when, with what, like this. You know, so it's just, then it becomes very clear. So it was like today is the first day that it made sense, the Sanskrit. You know, and it's kind of like been working with it in and out for, 30 years of connection, you know, something with it, and sit down and get your learn Sanskrit in 30 days book, and you know, all those different kinds of things, and you know, you play with it and you get nowhere, you know. So then it made sense because the concept made sense. So if the principles make sense, then everything else can make sense. So then it has to be seen what it is that is each varna and ashram is doing. What is their purpose? So that purpose is the main point of the ashram or varna. So actual austerity is the performance of one's duties, prescribed duties. That's actual austerity. Because the tendency is to want to do everybody else's duties because one gets more benefit from it. But perform your duties and do them right, because every duty has, you know, the front end and the back end of the duck. Right? You gotta feed one end and it quacks and makes noise. The other end has the golden egg. So generally what we want to do is just take the golden egg from all the varnas and all the ashrams, and that's me. But no, you want this golden egg, you gotta also feed that end of that duck. You know? Then it works nice. So then we see is the brahmachari's need is to know and to have skills and values by which to base their human form of life on. That's their need. Therefore, then there's so many different activities and things that are favorable and unfavorable. Right? Because whatever the identity, then there's what's favorable and what's unfavorable. What is one's maintenance? What is one's protection? You know, what is one's attitude? So the six symptoms of surrender, they apply in everything like that. So the grihastha's need is to engage his emotional and sensual desires in a, progressive way. Right? A grihastha means someone who wants to advance, but he has emotions and, you know, sense of security and sensuality needs that have to be fulfilled. So you have to have a way to do that that's progressive. Just like you want to study, it must be progressive. Vanaprastha, his need is to now consolidate his life experience, you know, into something that gets him out of the material world. You know, so therefore he focuses, as like a grihastha focuses on engaging the senses, the vanaprastha focuses on disengaging the senses. Right? The brahmachari basically doesn't engage the senses. The sannyasi doesn't engage the senses. But the grihastha and vanaprastha do. One in the, you know, the form of engaging, the other the inverse. Right? One is dealing with the senses in attachment, how to engage that, connect that to the Lord. The other is dealing with the senses in detachment. Right? One may say, well, no, that's the sannyasi. No, the sannyasi is indifference. Because both of them, then they're dealing on attachment. I have it, now I'm going to distance myself from it, learn how to live without it. But the sannyasi is, I don't need it. So it's there, it's not there, it doesn't matter. Right? The grihastha, I must have good food. The vanaprastha, I only eat simple food. The sannyasi, you know, whatever comes, doesn't matter. He doesn't need good food, he doesn't need simple food, it's just what Krishna says he needs. You know, and that's by his choice. The brahmacharya is the same thing, but because that's what the guru's arranged. And he's got to be submissive. So it's the same basic form, but does that make sense? And the sannyas is indifference to the material and only focusing on the spiritual. So that's why sannyas actually means not engaging. It's not renunciation. It's not actually giving up. Because any ashram can perform renunciation. Renunciation means giving up the fruit. Sannyas means not performing an endeavor that gives a material reaction. Etymological root of sannyas. So san means everything and nyas means to give up. Okay, so in its external form, it's renunciation. Because that means to give up. That you get something, you give it up. Right? But the actual thing is you give up the need for it. That's the actual position. You don't need it, therefore there's no endeavor for it. No, giving up the result is renunciation. That's tyag. Yeah, that's giving up is tyag. But sannyas means you've given up the need for the result. The one is you need the result, you get it, you give it up. That's tyag. But you give up the need for the result even though you perform the activity. That's what Krishna is saying. It's the one who actually advances not or detaches, not the one who lights no fire and does no work, but the one who lights fire and does work, but without desire for the result. So Krishna is looking at it, doesn't matter what ashram you're in. If you're done in this mentality, you're sannyas. And if you're not done in this mentality, technically you're not. You're renounced, but you're not sannyas. So that means any varna ashram can be sannyas, or any can be renounced. But the sannyas is better than renunciation, because it's a higher principle. So then we see that's the need, right? For the Shudra, it's basically expression of their art form. The ability to manifest in a, you know, to a degree of sophistication according to their nature and have it recognized. You know, whatever is their art form. You know, even if it's just washing pots, but, you know, they have to do it, they have to have the opportunity to do it and to be recognized. The Vaishya, it is to create economic development. The Kshatriya, it is to protect the citizens. Right? And the Brahmin, it is to know and to teach. These are the needs, the actual central needs of each of the Varnas and Ashrams. So starting from there, then one starts to find, you know, in other words, from that, then we can see, okay, so it, easy is, do the senses need to be engaged in connection to a woman or not? You know, so that either sets you up in two or not in the other two. Like that. And possibly also vanaprast can be followed. One can go from brahmacharya to vanaprast. One doesn't take so much. You see in the Vedic literature, a lot of the rishis and sages, they're vanaprastas technically. They're not sannyasis. So that's why many times they can move in the grihastha scene. It's not wrong. because technically they're not brahmacharis. They've graduated from school, but they didn't get married, like that. And so then they just live a life of celibacy, and they follow the principles of someone in that. You know, they're not out having a job, like that. Or they may be in contemporary, you may have to have a job or something, but whatever. But one's using one's money for spiritual development and things like that. So you see that there. And then what is the main thing in your occupation? What you're going to maintain yourself economically by teaching, studying and teaching, or, you know, the deity worship and those different patana patana yajana yajana, or by protection, administration, by economics, or by assisting someone else. So it's actually the varna, that in principle it's very, very simple, but due to false ego, generally devotees don't want to approach it. Because there's always the sense of one is superior to the other. Just as the same principle that they need to have varnashram is the same principle that keeps them away from it. Because they identify with material energy, you need to be able to engage that identity in Krishna service. But because they identify with it so much, then they're afraid of being lesser than someone else. Like you'll see in a varnashram conversation, all that's discussed is Brahma, Kshatriya, Vaishya. No one is, at the end of the day, is the Shudra. I mean, every varnashram meeting I've ever been to, it's always like that. You know, like that. So, no one wants to be the Shudra. But if you go to a community of devotees, how many devotees work at an outside job for somebody that they're not the proprietor or partner in or family member of? Right? How many are working for the government, you know, not in the secretarial position? You know, how many are teaching or doctors or a lawyer or few? So by occupation, you'll find most devotees are creating their economic stability through Shudra work. Like that. But if you bring this up immediately, there's a hue and outcry and this and that, but we're devotees. Of course, who did? All we're saying is Shudra simply means how you do your economics. What has it got to do with the soul? And what do you care? You know, without Shudras, it doesn't work. Shudras are the feet. Without feet, nothing moves. You know, just like in the ashram system, without brahmacharya, brahmacharyas are the feet. No one minds being a brahmachari. They're the feet. You know, in the Virat Purush. So the shudras are the feet, but it's Krishna's feet. So what's the problem? You know, Krishna's feet are okay. They're not bad. You know. So that's the whole thing of the Daya Varnashram. Is without him, it doesn't happen. You know, it's everything we got. You know, this book was printed by shudras. The guy who organized it was a vaishya. This cloth was made by shudras. This box was made by shudras. This cloth on the table was made by shudras. All these mics, this carpet, everything. The floor, the building we're sitting in, it was all made by shudras. It made it organized by Brahmins, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas. But it was actually executed by shudras. So if you look, everything, without them, it doesn't happen. So it's not a bad thing. Right? Human life starts from shudra. So if one's a malecha and yavana by previous, you know, samskar, shudras step up. They're human. You know? Otherwise, you know, malechas, yavanas are subhuman. Right? They're tribals. Yes. And Daivarnashana Vaishnava. So technically speaking, they're Brahmins by consciousness. But by their economic condition, and by their conditioned economic ability, then they're shudras. So it doesn't matter. Because that's what so whatever it is, the main thing to study it, for us it doesn't matter that we're, oh, I'm a shudra, I'm this. No. It's a matter of, okay, what way I'm going to maintain myself economically. So therefore I should know the duties of that. Well, let us say, you have a Shudra who is very responsible. He's very, you know, he's very favorable towards who he's working towards, working for, and favorable towards the goals and direction that the company is going in. He works very cooperatively with others in the company, you know, and he's respectful towards the person or persons managing the company or anyone associated with them. Right? And he does his best at his job to do his work in a good way. Name me one company in the world that won't take that person. But now you look around our community, why is it that a lot of devotees who run businesses and institutions won't hire devotees? Because they don't have those qualities. So the point is when we say, well, how are you going to make its qualities that make it? You have those qualities, anybody will hire you. You need to have some specific skill, okay, that's another thing. But in a lot of places, if you have the potential and you have those qualities, they'll take you on, they'll train you. They would much rather have somebody with the right attitude, who's a good shudra, right? May not have the skills, but he can be trained, than to have someone who's an expert shudra but doesn't have the right attitude. You know, 10 out of 10 will take the guy that doesn't have the skills over the with the good qualities. Always take. So that's what's the essential part. That's what makes a shudra. Like that. And the qualities of a shudra are the same as that of the devotee. Means these four principles of chastity, they apply to the devotee, they apply to women, they apply to brahmacharis, they apply to shudras. Because they both work and assist someone senior to them. Right? The student, the teacher, the wife, the husband, the shudra, whoever they're working for, and the brahmachari, you know, the teacher. So in all of them, they have to have a service attitude. They have to be a well-wisher of who they're working with. They have to be a well-wisher of who they're working with, you know, relatives, friends, whoever they find is important in that circle. And they have to have the same, that mood and determination. Same kind of goals. You have that, all four of those work. They don't have it, they don't work. So therefore, for us, there's not a problem. We make a thing as, okay, you know, being the devotee is great, but being a shudra, a woman, those duties is not. It's the same duties. And you'll find in them that those who don't do that, then they can't do the other. Because it's a principle. The other means we apply it, okay, as a devotee, but are we always favorable to Krishna? However he takes care of us is what we're satisfied with. Is anybody who's dear to Krishna is who's dear to us? Right? Do we have the same goals that Krishna has? So if we don't have him in our position as a shudra, a woman, or a brahmachari, there's a good chance you don't have him with Krishna either. Because the devotees are what's dear to Krishna. That's his relatives. His parivaras, the devotees. Are we nice with the devotees because they're dear to Krishna? Or, you know, this one did that and that one did that, and who does he think he is? And so that means then that aspect of chastity is down. You know? Do we have the same goals? Get out of God, you know, pleasing Krishna or pleasing herself? Right? So then that's another one gone. Well wisher Krishna, generally we are. Serve Krishna, generally. So two out of four do okay. But another two may or may not be doing okay. So if all those are there, then you can see it, and then you'll see it reflected in the other. Because the consciousness is higher, so if the consciousness is only has two out of four, then the conditioned nature is not going to have four out of four. Like that. You know, if the women trust Krishna, they'll trust men. If they don't trust Krishna, they don't trust men. Krishna's a man. Observe it. You'll see it's true. So this is how it works. So that's why these things are made, so that we know, okay, this is where my anartha is. My anartha is I put my goals forward before Krishna's. Or, you know, Krishna's okay, but everybody else, no. So then I know these are my areas I have to work. So it's not a matter of finding something wrong, it's doomsday and finished. And no, it's a matter of, okay, now is where it begins. Now it gets serious. You know? It's just like, where does each one of these, the deeper we go, then it becomes more, that's the beginning. Krishna is ever fresh. You know, did Krishna consciousness start from Shraddha? I would say technically it did. But you don't become recognized as a devotee until you take initiation, which is Bhajana Kriya. Then you can say it starts there. But because the anartha is just unsteady, so it doesn't really start until nishta, when you're fixed. But it doesn't really start until you get a taste. Then you can say, wow, where is this, you know, I've been chanting for so many years, but now, that's when it starts. Right? Or you could say, no, it starts when you're free from the conditioned nature. That's the real anartha nibbriti. So you come to the transcendental path, Brahma-bhuta, then it starts. But then you could say, no, until you've been accepted by the Lord's associates, and they've trained you and introduced you to Radha and Krishna, then it starts. Right? And then we could say, well, no, actually, until you develop prema, that's where it starts. So that's the whole thing. It keeps going more and more. So it's a matter of when these things are understood, then it goes to another level. And because Krishna consciousness is ever fresh, therefore that level is just as exciting as the earlier ones. You know, so one doesn't have to always worry about the good old days. The good old days are happening now. You know? So it's always progressive. Is that making sense? So the whole thing is this, if we find, okay, we have weaknesses here and there, then okay, then great, now we've understood it. Now we can deal with anartha nibbriti. If we didn't understand, then we may not be able to deal. So it's not a problem to see faults in oneself. And one shouldn't become ignorant or in the mode of ignorance that, you know, depressed. Because that means, you know, so one should just see, okay, one should be realistic and then, okay, this is what has to be done, make a positive plan, move forward. Because that's focused, otherwise then one's not. Does that make some sense? So in other words, you look for that, then within that, then you see, okay, of study, what study? You know, because in Brahmacharya you have scriptural study, you have basic, you know, devotional skills, you have also other, you know, shastric skills or whatever else needs to be done. These things need to be developed. So which one? So therefore, you know, what kind of education? What emotions and what senses have to be engaged? Then you know what kind of grihastha life you need. You know, and then you match that with what your ability is. So all these is ability. You know, you've decided, oh yeah, I want to be a neuro brain surgeon. Great. But, you know, if you got the shakes, forget it. You know? So then try something else. You know, still within the knowledge to find one that works for you. Like that. You know, so then does that make some sense? So then one places. One has talents that one wants to use for others and things like that, but you need somebody to work, and then you have to look, know what is a good boss and how to work under them. Or you have desire for economics. So then how are you going to get it? You're going to get it through agriculture, you're going to get it through cow protection, you're going to get it through business, you're going to get it through banking. You know, these are your methods. So then where it is, and then within agriculture, then, you know, growing what? Or within business, selling what? You know? So then like that, you get. Or protection, what aspect of protection? The overall, just one area, just a portfolio within it. You know? Or knowledge. Applying knowledge, teaching knowledge, studying knowledge. Because doing deity worship, yajnas, that's application of knowledge. Like that. Or it may be that one also has artistic skills in these areas and one wants to work in those areas. Just like you have the Ayurvedic doctor, that's a Brahmin. But he has an assistant who harvests the herbs and grinds the medicines and does massages and that. And those are Shudras. But they're medical Shudras. Or the kings, they have police. Right? Those are military Shudras. Right? The officers of the police force are like that. They may be, you know, Kshatriya. But your common person is not. Your common soldier, your common security, they're Shudras. That's why there's always a problem keeping them in line. They go bad easily, they become puffed up, because they don't have the noble characteristics. But they're Shudras for kings. They have that fighting spirit, protection spirit, but they have to be guided and protect themselves. Or the Vaishya. The Vaishya is there. He's the fat guy sitting over the corner chewing the pan, you know, behind the little brown box. And then you got, you know, 20 guys there, you know, and nicely dressed and throwing the saris and throwing more saris and more saris. Those are all Shudras. You know, generally we think the Shudra is the guy, you know, bringing in the tea or dusting off the thing. No, the salesman, those are all Shudras. Right? So that's how you tell. And then you figure, okay, where do you fit? What can you do? You like a business environment, but you don't like to run it. You like to work for somebody. So then, you know, you either just are just a person, or you're better, you're a supervisor. Like all this middle management. All the guys that come out with their MBAs and all this and that and get hired by the corporate managers and that, those are all Shudras. Because if they were Vaishnavas, they wouldn't be doing an MBA. They'd be doing business. Why would you be spending money, thousands of dollars on an MBA, when you could invest it and make money? And a Vaishya can't work for anyone else. He just can't. He'd rather be selling pawn on the corner and be independent than get $100,000 salary and work for someone else. He just can't do it. He can be a partner. He can be a relative and work as a family business so everybody takes a part. He can't just work for someone. He can't. So that's just, then one sees what is the need. So one starts with those major principles. And then where it works back, and then it gets finer details. It's very scientific. Then it can be worked out. But just the important thing is that the ego doesn't get in the way. That I want to be. No, because devotees are all Brahmins on the devotional platform. Any initiated devotee, doesn't matter how he makes his economics, then he performs the brahminical duties of studying and teaching and preaching and those things. Doing puja and all that. But it may not be his lifestyle. So in the same Vaishya nature, it won't be full-time pujari. You know? But he likes to do puja. You know, so he's there for festivals, he likes to dress the deities or do artiks or like that. So then that works. But he won't make his economics by that. He won't be maintained by being pujari. Right? He would rather, you know, make money and do puja. Like that. Does that make some sense? So the point is it doesn't matter, because all the opportunities that are there in the brahminical culture are open for anyone in the varnashram system. But it has its place. You know? It naturally has, certain things are more favored or not favored by. You know, it's just, does that make some sense? So then it's there. It's just who. You're a devotee, they're a devotee. Shudra's giving the class, but then when he goes to work, then the Vaishya tells him what to do. But in the class, he may be telling the Vaishya what to do. Because as a devotee, he may have more realization. You know? Like you see there, Vasu Ghosh, Adi Gaya. Ghoshas, they're Vaishyas. Vaishyas by nature, Venus is in the throat. That's how they do business. Sweet talk, so they have sweet voices. So, generally you'll find it's very common that Vaishyas are very good singers. Very, very good singers. I said Vaishyas. business person. They're very good singers by nature. Singers, again, you know, like that. While a lot of times you find Brahmins, they can't carry a tune in their bucket, you know. I mean, absolutely can. I've seen some of the best pujaris I know. They're quiet, they sit on the side. Only now and again, when they become so ecstatic, you hear them singing. Then you understand why you never hear them. They just can't carry a tune. If they do, they're the best. You know, if the Brahmin is good in music, there's no one better. Like in India, all your top musicians generally are all Brahmins, or Brahmin families converted into Muslims. But they're all the top musicians are all Brahmins. You know, Ravi Shankar, they're Brahmins. Nikhil Banerjee. Aluddin Khan means Aluddin and his, what's it, Ali Akbar. They're converted Brahmins. They're mine. Ali Akbar's father, who was Ravi Shankar's teacher, he used to, every Ekadasi, go down in his dhoti and chadar and go take a bath in the Ganga. Every Ekadasi. Yes, Subramanya. All these things, you see, they're all from that line. Now and again you get a few coming up from other things, but they're not as prominent. If Brahman gets in, they're the best. But it's rare that they'll get into those fields. Like Dronacharya, he's a Brahmin. He gets into the martial sciences. There's no one better than him. Parasarama is also Brahmin. So there's no one better, though generally they don't get into that field. Or they know the field, they teach it, but they don't practice it. Like that. So that's the point. They get into it, they're the best. Kshatriyas also, they like arts a lot because they're practical. They get something done, they see it. So many times the Kshatriyas are expert in all the arts. You know, so they'll be good singers, look at this and that. And, you know, but it's done right, it's done perfectly, it's done that. It's, you know, you can tell the difference between them and a Shudra. You can tell the difference between a musician and the four Varnas. You know, because for the Brahmin it's the science of music and how to actually use it, the field. You have the knowledge, you know how it works. The Kshatriya, then it's, you know, it's the challenge. He's taken it, he's learned it. Now he's going to present this. Ah, it's this time of day, and it's a difficult raga. So they'll always go for the more difficult ragas, tall, this, that, because it's the challenge. The Vaishya is just, it's sweet, it's nice, and they get recognition for it. So there's a touch of both. They know what works, so they're there. The Shudra, then, it's to express themselves and to be recognized for that. Right? For the Vaishya, fame is the most important. For the Shudra, fame is the most important. For Vaishya, wealth. For Kshatriya, influence. And for the Brahmin, knowledge. Like that. Yeah. Like you see, you see so many times actors, they become so popular, musicians so popular. Maybe some so adjusted to that when they're kind of like, you know, their karma starts to wane, then they get into drugs. They can't handle not being famous anymore, or less famous. Just can't handle it. Because that's the most important thing for them. Yes. Do the women fit into the varna? I mean, how do the women fit?
When they're not
under protection of the men. They become like men. Okay, so how do the women in the modern scenario fit in? They become like men, but they can't, because the emotions are different. The difficulty is for the man to go out, he goes out and gets, then comes home, and that's where kind of like the comfortable environment is. And he can handle unlimited trouble outside. In the house, very, very minimal tolerance for trouble in the house. The women, it's the opposite. They can handle unlimited trouble in the house. You know, kids yelling and screaming and this and that, and, you know, everything happening. Very minimal outside, because the point is women function on attachment. What they're attached, they attach themselves to something, then that sphere is included. So if they are out in the professional world, you'll see when they go out, they're either doing menial service, which is the standard thing in the Vedic culture if a woman has to maintain herself. She generally gets into menial service because there's something there, it's more sweet, it's closer, it's more intimate to the families that they'll work with and all that. They'll be taken care of more, they'll be protected more. So then it's more attuned to their nature. The modern is they go out as professionals, and you'll see there's nothing in between. You know, you don't find the women there working, you know, pulling the lever at a factory, you know, or stuff like that. You know, it's either their boss or them down there, you know, like that. So because they attach their whole identity with it. You know, for the man, it's his job. You know, and his identity, I do my job well or not. But he doesn't so much identify with the job. Sometimes for status, he'll use it. But women identify themselves with position. Whatever the opulence is, they directly identify with it. You know, if she's the boss, she is the boss. The man is he's the boss, so therefore you listen to him. But if there's not a position where someone has to listen, it doesn't matter. But the woman, she's the boss. That's the identity. You know, she does have this facility. She has this facility because she is the boss. So it's the attachment. So if they attach themselves to it, they can function with it and handle all the roughness that comes with it. But if that attachment's not there, then they can't function. And if something happens that cracks that, then they go down very badly. Emotionally, they suffer very greatly. Well, the man is a setback, but, you know, it'll work because he's used to that. That's their world. So intellectually, he'll solve the problem. Women emotionally solve it. You know? So if there's a, you know, it's like something's going wrong, right? So then the man will come in and try to logically explain and all this. You know, like that. The women will come in and give emotional solutions. Oh, I'm not fit for this. No, no, you're great. You know, I've heard other people say, you know, that you're so wonderful and this, and they really like. You know, then that's it. You know, the man will go, okay, you gotta cook something. Oh, no, I'm not good enough. I don't this and that. Why? Because if she does it, if it's not that the whole community praises her for what she cooks, she's not gonna cook it. Someone else comes in, no, everybody says it's so good. They were saying, I heard someone say that, you know, at this program, it's not, you know, is this person cooking? You know, it's like that. And then, really? You know, it goes in that, because it's, then they get that confidence. And then, because emotionally they know that they're going to get a good result. Because they have to get an emotionally good result. Facility is only the field for the emotion. Like the man will come in, no, it's your duty, and no, we got to be detached. Even if it doesn't come out nice, we got to make that endeavor for Krishna. Not, do you get anywhere? No. Not on the spot. In the long run, yes, but on the spot, no. If it's to another man, yes. Woman, no. Right. So you have that principle that. Therefore, they can fit in, but they have to know what are the limits of the feminine nature. What are the strengths and weaknesses? So that if they have to situate themselves out in the, you know, working world, they should do it in such a way they don't compromise their standards. You know? So they have to be very aware of what they're dealing with. How much they can tolerate, you know. They got a good left hook, you know, so then they might be able to get farther. You know. So then they have to know what's there. Because the point is it's, that's why the Vedic, like you see, like you take someone like China. Now one can't say that China is not organized in the way of modern economics and facility. I mean, if you've ever visited, the most amount of modern new buildings in any one place you'll find there. Now you go to New York, they're all old buildings. Now and again, one new building comes up. So at any one time, there may be a few new buildings sitting there in Manhattan. you know, or any skyline of the world. You go to, it's all new buildings. And there's tons of them. There's not one or two. It's like, you know, everything's new. And they've got as big a malls, as modern a malls as anything anywhere. Most of the places, after seeing the malls in China, I went, most cities of the world, they have less modern malls. So they're, and their women and men work. But they know very clearly what is feminine nature and masculine nature, and it's never compromised. Both of them can do everything. They can wear the same clothes, right? Because in China, everybody wore the same clothes, men and women, same size. Everybody wore size 36, and if you were bigger, you got 42, right? I'm not joking. This is this reality. You know, it was all gray, you know, with the buttons, and it's just the way it was. No? Yeah. So that's the way it is. And they have no problem. You know, if situation is favorable, man cooks. Situation is more favorable, woman cooks. Doesn't matter. But at the same time, women are women, men are men. You know, just In what ways? Is they know the way they deal and the way they talk and the way they women talk as women. They get their work done as women. Yeah, they act as men and they go in there and they're tough and they're this and that. And as long as you're submissive to that, it works very nice and then the women's liberation is successful. But if they, taking on the mood of this man, you react as a man and shut them down, then all unfair male chauvinism, this and that, it's like, hey, you're going to come into the man's world that if you can dish it out, you got to be able to take it. If you can't take it, then, you know, get out of here. You know, so it's just, you know, that's the way it is. So it's unrealistic. And that's why it doesn't work. They suffer, everybody else suffers. It's a mess. Chinese, everybody works. Man works, wife works. They have only one kid. You know, it's very expensive. They live in a little dinky apartment. But their social fabric is stronger than, I would say, most any Western first world country. I would say it's much stronger. It's much more similar to the Vedic. Though the Chinese think that they're so different from the Vedic because they eat with chopsticks and the Indians eat with their fingers. But in principle, it's all the same. The moods of men, moods of women, the interaction, how they deal, interact, the values, it's all the same. It's not. So it's even in the modern, it can be done. You know? The Indian family, they work, right? You have all those ladies cleaning over here in the houses. They're working, they got families. So it's possible, but the idea is that there's this thing of a particular attitude that's superior. And so if you have that, then that's better. But it's not feminine. So it doesn't work. Pleasantness works better than in your face. Most men step back from that because it's just so unbecoming. They just don't want to deal with a woman who's so masculine. And they'd rather not take the trouble. Right? They're going, no, why you don't take the trouble? In other words, why don't you interact? Because they still, as a woman, need interaction. So that's why they like to fight about it. Because then there's interaction. They're getting some emotional flavor out of it. You know, men are only going to fight to establish the thing and finish. Women are fighting to create interaction. As long as it gives interaction, they do it. It has shock value, it has this, it gets the work done. Right? You know what I'm saying? Brockovich walks into the office and no one even notices. She's not going to go out and spend money on a skimpy dress. Right? She only does that because it gets shock value. If it doesn't get shock value, who cares? They're not going to do it. Women are not going to work one, kilojoule more than they have to get the result. Right? So that's the way it doesn't give the results. They don't. They're, on that way, they're much more pragmatic than men. Men will philosophize and idealize and all that. Woman has her ideal, but she has to practically getting it. Well, the man can work for many, many years. And, you know what I'm saying? Like you want to free a country. It took 100 years to free India once they decided to do it. Right? But if you look at it, all the main people doing it were men. A few women here and there. Mostly men. Because they have that determination to make that plan. Because they have that idea and they're not getting it. They're not getting it. The woman has to taste something now. She can taste in the future also. It's just like the man. He wants to be renounced. So from to now, he's renounced. You know, okay, we don't eat this, we don't wear this, we don't this, we don't that. Great. And it works for the men. And then if it doesn't work, then later on, okay, well then we'll add something more in like that. Women can be renounced as long as there's also all the other facilities. She's being very renounced in her nice house. You know, she's being very, you know, detached with all facility. Then it functions. You know, so it has to know the nature. Therefore, you see, when the women think, the man is the normal thing before, everything was not there, right? Right? You have the men, they just have a profile, or they have an expertise, or they have an attitude. That's all they got. But you see the professional women, they have the car, they have the house, they have the office, they have... Always you see, whenever you see the professional women, all these elements have to be shown. Right? Ever seen James Bond in office? Ever seen him in a house, his own? Ever seen... No. But every professional woman who's the CEO of the company, you always see her office, you always see her car, you always see her mobile phone, you always see her outfits, you always see her bedroom, you always see her house, you always see her social, because that's them. So you may say, no, no, but they're still women. Even they're acting as men, they still act as women. If you know what feminine nature is, you can see they're only acting as women, they're not acting as men. They're not performing the men's duties. They can perform the activities, but not the duties. Because they're not men. Just like the men doesn't perform the women's duties. You know, some of the activities may be done, but the attitude is different. When we say duties, we mean the attitude and everything that comes with it. We don't mean that she cooks, he doesn't. Right? He cooks because he has to eat. Or he cooks as it's the science of cooking and he gets into it. She cooks because of the reaction she'll get when every the other members of the family eat it and say, this is nice. Right? Because that's what they want. They learn the science. The man isn't the science. You know? Or just the practical. He's got to eat. The women never cook something just to eat. It's got to be nice, it's got to be good, it's got to be appropriate for the situation. It's got to be some emotional something you're going to get out of it, emotional essentially. It can't just be just eat. So it's different, the mentality. So seeing that, then you know how to apply. So it's not that it can't, and that's not that the woman can't go out and do all the activities that the men do. But the point is will it work for them in the long run? Right? They have to be under the protection of some masculine figure at some level. Whether it's Krishna, or whether it's Guru, or whether it's the temple authorities, or relatives, or senior devotees, or friends, or family members, or somewhere there has to be something to create that stability. You know, a flag is wonderful because of its connection to the pole. If it's not, it's just blowing. No one goes, wow, look at that great flag flying off into the distance. No. You just go, hey, that flag's loose. You don't, it doesn't matter. You don't comment on the kind of flag. So that's the whole point. Because they're connected, then you can appreciate the good qualities. So when the woman is connected to some kind of masculine nature, then all her good qualities come out. And if they're not, they don't. They get befuddled. It's a basic principle. So based on that, then you see it's there. Then anything can be done. Right? You know, the question comes up, should women be gurus? They can be gurus. But they have to be connected to some masculine authority. Because there is a time when there's going to be confusion, unless they're liberated. But if they're liberated, then they're connected to Krishna and the associates. But if they're not liberated, then there better be some strong man in their life that when, you know, the disciple, you know, dumps on them or decides to take initiation from someone else or, you know, blasphemes them and that. So women won't handle that. Men, if they just get annoyed, I got to be more careful next time. Or this and that. Women will break down. Put it in writing. They will crack. So unless they have some senior Vaishnava that is strong enough in their life that when these things happen they can straighten them out, don't do it. Same. They want to be temple president, they want to be this. Margaret Thatcher, the Iron Lady. She was powerful, she was intelligent, she was practical, she got it done. She was probably one of the best, you know, prime ministers that they've had, you know, historically. She was great. She was the tough lady. Even after she was out of office, she was a, you know, strong woman and, you know, very respectable. The day her husband died, she fell apart. And she says, her whole strength came from her husband. And on that, then all her good qualities she could manifest and go out and do that. Only because he was there. He wasn't there, he had it. Yes, means you can. But it means you can take it both ways. But since we were discussing here, the topic was women, we're looking at it from that angle. But it works both ways. Because technically, between women and men attached to women, women are more powerful. Because they're the ones that get the men to do. But still, even those powerful women, without that man, their power doesn't manifest. And that empowers the man. So it kind of goes both ways. But for those who aren't attached to women, then women aren't more powerful. That's why women respect those who are not attached to women. You know, like that. Women have great respect for brahmacharis, sannyasis, like that. They actually have more respect for them, I would say, than most, than men do. Like that. Because in general, basically all women will respect a good brahmachari or sannyasi. The men may or may not even notice, but the women will know who's a good brahmachari. So they know, and they respect it, because it's something out of their field. It's detachment, their attachment. So it's something out of their field, they can't grasp it, so it's something mystical to them, so it's respected. But attached men, they're attached, so they know the field, so they know how to control the whole situation. So the respect for those men is less. Respect is there, there's a nice relationship. But it's less than those who are out of the field, because they have no control over them, so they're automatic and completely submissive. But the men in the field of attachment, they're less respected towards. You know. But I'm talking on, you know, absolute, not absolute, but I mean on the completeness of that. Because technically it just has to be 50%. In the marriage, right? 50% is that's the contract. You give 50%, they give 50%. Less than that is a problem. More than that's rare, right? Because that's the field of attachment. But when you're dealing in detachment, it's complete, right? It's much more. Does that make sense? So it does apply. You know, the men are strong because the women are behind them. A man is strong because he has a good woman behind him. Like that. No attached man is strong if he doesn't have some woman behind him. You know, some good woman. Like that. At the same time, there's no good woman that doesn't have a man behind her. So So that's the main field. And because it's the prominent field, then it can be talked more. But at the same time, because we're ultimately trying to get out of here, therefore we specifically, as Vaishnavas, emphasize the detachment side. Though most people are functioning in a field of attachment. But if it's not emphasized, it won't be taken seriously. In other words, Krishna is saying, perform your duties with detachment, with knowledge, with devotion. Like that. So otherwise, then the tendency would be to perform in an attached way, like Arjuna was. He came on the battlefield from the platform of attachment. But, and then Krishna says, you're a fool, and he describes Shankar Yoga. So then Arjuna immediately thinks, yeah, great, I'll just go to the forest. And then Krishna says, no, you're going to do your duty with knowledge and detachment. It's kind of like, don't the two kind of like not go together? You know, you do it because you're attached, or you don't do it because you're detached. So to say you're going to do it with detachment, that's something new. So these are, you know, so many things. So it can be done, but it has to be thought about very, very carefully. Because the point is it may work today, it may be great today, but it's kind of like, are they still there? Right? I mean, I've seen temple presidents, men, 20, 30 years. But women temple presidents, you don't necessarily see that long. Because the home situation of the temple changes, the environment changes, and then when it changes, then it becomes unpalatable for them. So then they can't find they don't get what their needs fulfilled. It means their you know, what feminine needs fulfilled. Therefore, then they have to go somewhere else to get it. So that's why it's not. You can do it, but you have to see. You know, you can say, "Well, she did it." Yeah, but that's she did. She's not doing it now. So that's the point. But it's not a problem. The girl's a good manager. She can manage. Why not? But she has to be a good manager. Shouldn't be. You know, we're not into scheduled castes and tribes and that, and so we have a quota system. You know, so many women have to be managers. So many people say like this. No, managers should be people who manage. We don't care if it's a man or a woman, but if they don't have the quality to manage, why they should be a manager? Just because she's a woman? You know, and then if she's a woman, then let's get down to detail. Okay, what makes it if she's a woman? Okay, is it the gross, the subtle body? Then what are the qualities that'll be there? You know, I mean, it's like, you know, what size shoes does she wear? Okay, should we only accept, you know, women managers who wear size, you know, 9.5 shoe? You know? So, I mean, how does it work? It doesn't. It's because it's just because she's a woman? Or only women in stilettos can manage? Or, you know, how does it. So it's got to be that they can manage. Men may or may not be good managers, but that's kind of like their area and they should find it. But for women, they got to be that, otherwise they shouldn't do it. You know, otherwise do something else, because if they don't get the result, if they're not a manager, they won't get the result, it won't be a problem. They'll suffer. They shouldn't suffer. The Vedic culture is women shouldn't suffer. Therefore, they should be situated properly. Whatever it is. Like a Kshatriya woman, she's the queen. She has to manage thousands of servants. That's her job to take care of the house. You know? You got a darbar this big. The thing's covered with mattresses, not little plastic mats. Mattresses. Right? Not thin mattresses. Fat mattresses, 6 inches thick. That's covered all in pure white sheets. There's not one spot anywhere. On top of that, you got all your Persian rugs and everything like that. On top of that, you have your furniture. And on top of that, you have all your paraphernalia for that particular situation. That's cleaned every day. Who does that? Hundreds of people. And that's one room. So that's management. Draupadi said, I know how much wealth the Pandavas have. They don't know, because it's her job to take care of the wealth of the family. So one of the duties that women are engaged in is taking care of collecting and managing the wealth, family wealth. Like that. They can't spend it without the husband's approval. He's told, spend it on this and that, but any new expenditure, she has to take approval. But she manages it. So that means she knew what Yudhishthir had. His wealth was unlimited. She knew. Yudhishthir didn't know. Basically. They're not the treasure of the kingdom. She's talking about their personal wealth. But it's that the man makes the money, he hands the money over to the woman, she spends it. Like that. And it's her business that she can't overspend. Like in the Japanese culture, the woman has to come to the man for money because she's gone out of the budget. It's considered the most, you know, disgraceful, dishonorable thing. So the women are so careful that they exactly spend their money, budget it, and everything properly. That's their business. The man's business is to make it, the woman's business is to spend it. So the spending it, the modern woman likes to spend it, but they want it unlimited on the other side. No, you spend according to what you have. You're given $100, you can spend that. You can't spend $101. Great mother, yeah. Yeah, can be mother, can be wife, because we have Prabhupada talks in the purport in here, where a few before, he talks about that women are more powerful than men. Mm-hmm. That there he mentions Caesar and Cleopatra. Like that. But for the man to have faith in a woman that he could take so much power means he had a good mother. Caesar's mother was a good mother. You know? Because of her, he learned what he learned, that he could, therefore, then, same way, if the girl doesn't have a good father, she won't be able to take shelter of the husband or the son. So in the same way as if the boy didn't have a good mother, then he's going to have difficulty with any woman. I think we should end here because it's 11 o'clock is coming. Thank you. Grantaraj Shiman Bhagavatam ki, Shila Prabhupada ki, Samavita Bhaktivrinda ki, Jaina Daigong Rupnevanandhi.